Hello.
Hey, how y'all doing?
We're good, David.
Cool. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Okay. Today we're going to talk about all the different ways there are to do deals. We're going to break it out. There's a saying I first learned when I got into real estate, and it was called, every real estate deal doesn't need a hammer. And what it meant was that most people getting into this business, they get into it and they learn one technique, and they try to apply that one technique to every deal they go do. And it doesn't work that way. Like, they learn flipping, and so every deal they want to flip. But some deals can't be flipped or whatever and whatnot. So you want to learn the gamut of all the ways there are to do real estate deals and get them out before you so that you can become a transaction engineer, so that you know all the ways to take down a deal, all the ways to structure them. This is the key to learning how to structure deals, how to tell the numbers, what they mean. It's in learning all the different tools you're going to put in your tool belt. The first thing you need to know about real estate investing is that you're going from it from a principal standpoint. So that what that means is when you sign a contract to buy a piece of property, you're the principal. You're the person in there that's going to, you're signing the contract and you're going to do something with it. So you're not acting as an agent or a broker or anything else. You're not brokering a piece of real estate. You're acting on behalf to buy it and then sell it. Just sometimes you buy it and sell it rather rapidly. And so that's the first thing you have to understand. But as we go through here, we're going to start going through all the different tools and tips and techniques and different things of buying real estate that you need to know. There'll be tidbits of things that I'll throw out there that we'll cover in other parts. Mainly here, we want to, like I said, get all the techniques out so that you can start learning how to structure deals, start dealing with motivated sellers, start putting your own deals together in your mind so that when you look at a deal, you have a better idea how, okay, this is how I'm going to take this one down. Because every time you go buy a piece of property, you go to contract it, you always have to know your exit, no matter what. Your exit, you got to know it. You want to know how to get out the back door before you get in the front door. If you don't know your exit, you're going to get your clock clean. Sometimes you want to have two or three of them. What that means is you go to buy a piece of property and you want to know, okay, am I going to wholesale this and am I going to retail it? Am I going to retail it for all cash? I'm going to retail it sort of in between wholesale and retail. Am I going to owner finance it? I mean, there's just tons of different things. But you've got to know your exit before you ever start. So that way you can get it done. And sometimes your exit's going to change. So you got to have different exit strategies, because they're not all perfect. The market changes or different things change to affect that. But first, let me start off. First thing you're going to go out and do, that the first place most people start in real estate is by going out and putting a property under contract, and then they put it under contract and then they flip their contract. That's the first. And so that happens real simply. What it is you take your real estate contract, you go find somebody that's motivated to sell, you write up a contract to buy it all cash or buy it with owner financing or buy it however, and then you turn around and you've got a deal on a property, and once you have that deal on the property, you turn around and you assign that contract to another investor. It's real simple. Most flips that happen are typically wholesale flips. It means if you find a $100,000 property, you're buying it for 50, 60 cents on the dollar, putting it under contract to buy all cash, then you flip it to another investor, and you turn around and assign them a contract. An example of that, like a flip I did, I don't do a lot of flips, but one I did a year or so ago was had a commercial property that we had put under contract for $215,000, I believe. And it was worth about $3.25. And we were going to have to put about $20,000-$30,000 cash into it to rehab it, get it back up to date, besides close on it. Our closing date was coming up in the next 10 days, and all of a sudden at the end of the 10 days we decided that, hey, we'd rather just get out of this thing than do it. So we found another investor that was willing to let us assign the contract to him and take our position. So we assigned our contract to him, he wrote us a $7,500 check, and we were out. And he closed on it before the 10 days were up, paid cash actually. And I think he later sold that property for about $250,000 himself. So he made a nice little chunk, and then that guy sold it for $3.25. So several people made money on that deal. But that's okay. I don't have a problem. I got my $7,500 check, and I was out with my way. That's the good thing about flipping or wholesaling. If you get to do it, those little pieces of paper are real valuable. as you're going along and you've got your contract, there's another contract type transaction you can do too. They're not heavily used in residential real estate, but it's called an option. And it's almost the same thing. A properly worded contract, real estate contract, can serve as an option. The reason why is because typically you're not going to put more than $10 earnest money, or I mean, the most I've ever put up is $1,000, and that was on an $825,000 property. But whenever you're doing this, you're typically not going to put up more than $10 as earnest money. And so that, if your contract's worded correctly, it limits your liability to that money that you put up. That's your downside. And an option is the same thing. An option, you can get an option on a piece of real estate, but it's typically used more for buying notes or for buying commercial type real estate, land, things like that. But using an option, it gives you the unilateral right to buy. So it's one-sided transaction. In other words, you have the right to buy, but not the obligation. Everybody with me there? Yeah. With an option, you have the unilateral right to buy, but not the obligation. You have an option to purchase it. It's just like in the stock market. You have an you buy an option on stocks, and you have the option to purchase stocks, but you don't have to do it. So your only downside is the money you spend on the option. So if your option expires, so like on a piece of real estate, that might be something like you go out and you think something's going to happen on a corner lot of a piece of land, and you get the option on it because you think, oh, wow, this a gas station might go here or something might go here. This land's going to be valuable. So you might put an option on it for $100 or something, tie it up for the next 5 years, an option to purchase it for, say, maybe that piece of land was the guy wants $50,000 for it right now. So you tie it up for the next 5 years. You put up $100, and then 5 years later, things are built right across the street, and that land becomes valuable, and somebody wants that corner. Well, now you've got your option, but now somebody wants that corner real bad, and they decide, you know what, we'll give you $150,000 for it. So for $100, you made a whole lot of money. So you just turn around and either sell your option or exercise your option. An example of a deal I've done like that, probably one of the easiest deals I ever did, was I went out and I knew of a property that was fixing to sell. And I knew there was also an underlying note on the property. So, and we'll get into notes a little bit deeper here in a minute, but I knew there was an underlying note on the property. The note is the underlying financing. Because I knew that property was for sale, I had sort of insider information. I went out and I called the guy up that had on the note, and I knew it was an investor, and I knew he had moved to Australia. So I turned around and I optioned the note. And I think the note was something like, I don't remember exactly, something like $50,000 thereabouts or whatever. And so whenever we optioned to buy it, knowing the property was fixing to sell, because the underlying financing, when that property sells, that note has to be paid off. Well, that note wasn't due to come due. It was a $50,000 note with no payments or anything else. It wasn't due to come due for about 3 years, 5 years, something like that. But it was going to happen right now. So I got a hold of that investor, and I got an option to purchase that note for $10,000 less. Like I said, I don't remember the exact numbers. But I got an option to purchase for $10,000 less of whatever it was. So in this case, like I say, I think it was $50,000, but I got an option to purchase, we'll say, for $40,000. And when I got the option to purchase, we filed the option with the title company. And so basically when the people got financial that house and paid it off, the underlying note, I owned it. I had the option to buy it. The title company calls me up and says, well, what do you want to do? Well, I want to exercise my option, of course. So the moment I exercised my option, the financing paid the $40,000 to the other guy, and then turned around and because I had an option to buy it from him for $40,000, but then the face value of the note was $50,000. So then I made $10,000 just like that, doing nothing, just by knowing something, knowing how to use it. That's the easiest money I've ever made in real estate, is by using options. So now you've got flips, you've got options. Okay, the next thing you do.
Can I ask a question right here?
Absolutely.
Who do you exercise that option with? I mean, back up for a minute.
Okay.
You had inside information that it was getting ready to sell.
I got the option from the guy that owned the note. The guy that owned the note, he was supposed to get paid $50,000 in a set amount of time, okay? You with me? He had a note on the underlying financing. He was supposed to get paid in a set amount of time.
You just found this out by somebody telling you.
Well, I knew the property was going to sell, so I tracked the guy down. Do you know what I'm saying?
They owned it.
Yeah, they owned the note.
They owned the note.
Yes, and he owned a $50,000 note, so it works
out.
How
did you know there was a note on it? It wasn't just listed with a real estate person or something. How did you know
that? I knew there was underlying financing on the property. I knew what had happened. There was an underlying, it worked like this. The guy owned a $50,000 note, and I'm going to get into notes in detail in a minute, but he owned a $50,000 note, and he had moved off, and I knew it. What he didn't know, and this wasn't due and payable. It was going to be paid in one lump sum, like I said, 3 or 5 years later. He had moved off. He just put his finance on the property. He got rid of the property. That's how he had done it. And the property was going up for sale and fixing to cash out. And I knew that. And so an option on that note was a smart move. Do you follow me?
Yes, it
is. So I turned around and I optioned from him, because he was out of the picture and gone. And I had to go literally across the ocean to, you know, luckily email is wonderful.
To contact him.
And I got a hold of him and said, look, you know, I may be interested in buying your note. He said, cool, what will you give me for it? We negotiated and haggled back and forth, and I didn't need too much of a discount because I knew the money was coming from the sale of the property. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We're dealing with the underlying financing. So I negotiated, and I think for $10, we signed a contract, okay, or an option agreement. And I turned around, and I got that signed option agreement back to the title company before it closed. Then now, whenever it come time, they turned around, the property sold for like $130,000. Okay, this was just a note underlying on the bottom.
Yeah.
So when the property sold, it paid off that $50,000. But my option, they bumped up against my option there, and they said, oh, you've got an option to buy this note, Mr. Alexander. What do you want to do? Oh, well, what's going on? Oh, well, the property's fixing to be sold. Okay, cool. Exercise my option. So they exercised my option, and $10,000 fell through the cracks. Now, he got $40,000 across, you know, they took it, wired it back across to him, but I still made $10,000 in the process.
Yeah.
And it looked like...
Huh? Why would he do that? He had a note for 50. Why would he?
Because he wasn't due to get paid off in, like I said, 3 to 5 years.
And so you made a deal where you'd pay him off earlier?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, I made a deal where I was going to pay him off earlier, but I knew that the property was going to cash out.
You knew.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do this unless you knew that it was going to sell.
Yeah, you don't want to risk.
You didn't really want to pay the $40,000.
No.
were just gambling that he
could. And he wanted $40,000 quicker than waiting for $50,000.
That's right. See, he could presumably take $40,000, reinvest it where he was at, and make a whole lot more money with it.
And how can you find these things out about properties and everything?
You get wired. Once you get in networking, you get wired, and you learn what's going on. So that's the cool thing with notes. Okay, the next thing, and like I said, I'm going from basic to more complex, and I'll go into notes even more in depth here in a minute. The next place to go would be lease options. Okay, typically out there, people are taught that you can go out and you can find somebody, and this works good on commercial property. I'm not crazy about it on residential property, and I'll tell you the pros and cons here in a minute. But what you can go out and do, you can find somebody. And if you're going to do it on a residential property, what you would be doing is you'd find somebody that's typically, say, a tired landlord. They've been renting a property out forever, so they're used to renting it. And you call them up and you say, well, what are you fixing to do? And they say, well, we're going to rent it back out. A lot of new investors use this technique whenever they're afraid to take title to a property. And so me, I like taking title of the property. I want to own the property or whatever, control it completely, get paid for it. I'll go into that in detail in a minute. But you go out and you lease a property with an option to buy. Okay? So what that means is you lease a property, and your goal to lease the property is to lease it for the payments that the people are making. Okay? That's your goal. So what that would mean is let's say that somebody had a property and it's worth $80,000. They just want out. They owe $65,000 on it. Okay, so you turn around and their payments are $650 a month. You agree to lease the property from them for $650 a month. Their payment, or if you can negotiate better for less than their payment, make them pay part of it even. But you agree to lease it from them for their payment. If you can do that, then you turn around and you option it to buy. Okay, so you get an option agreement, a lease agreement, and a separate option agreement. You get the separate option agreement from them, and you can also use a combined one. There are pros and cons of both. And like I said, I'll go into some of it. I'm not going to major detail, but I'll go into some of it. Mainly, I want you to understand the structure of this type technique. And so you get the option. Let's say you put up $100 or $50 or $10. It doesn't matter for the option. Okay? So you get an option to purchase the property as well. And your option to purchase it is for the same $65,000 for what's owed on the property, preferably. You could even option it for more. You could option it for $70 or $80. It doesn't matter. Because your idea on this technique here is to make money on the... Well, it's always to make as much money as you can, but to make money on the appreciation of the property, the leverage of it. But in this case, we're going to do it for $65,000, which is what's owed. Because if I was ever going to do it, I'd shoot for the gold. So you do a lease option for what they owe. $650 payment, $65,000. Then you turn around, and you got several places you can go from here. One, you can turn around and you can do what's called a sandwich lease option. Okay? So the rent-to-own deals you see out there, you can turn around and you could sublease it and give somebody else an option. That's one move you could make. You can turn around, so you run your ad, rent-to-own or whatever, so you find somebody with $2,000 down, they give you $2,000. And then you, for that $2,000, you give them an option, or maybe $1,000 of its deposit and $1,000 of its option, whatever. But you give them the option to purchase the property for $85,000 in 3 years. So what they've done, you've effectively sold it to them in 3 years, and they've locked in their price for 3 years. And the way you can get to that real quick is say, well, what do you think it'll appreciate at? How much do you think this house will appreciate in the next 3 years? It's worth 65 or 70 now. How much do you think it'll appreciate? And most people are going to tell you a higher number than what it really is. And that's a good thing. I mean, most people are going to tell you, and the higher, the better. Because they don't realize that they're going on against their own benefit. But most people, maybe 10% a year. Okay. Well, 10% a year, I don't have my calculator. 10% a year, that's $6,500 the first year. So let's say if you went and averaged $7,000, that's $21,000 more. You know, so you could show them it's going to be worth $86,000 a couple of years. If they said 12%, you can show them it'd be worth $90,000. You're giving them the option for $85,000. You're happy. So they're making a little money on the deal. And there's rent credits and different things you can do when you get into it real complicated. I'm more just teaching the idea of the technique, the fundamental of it, today. So, but you can do a sandwich lease option and do that. So you structure a lease with an option to purchase on one side, then you structure a lease with option to purchase on the other side. The other thing you can do with lease options are you can just flat out assign them. You can assign them just like you would a contract. So you've got a contract, a lease with an option to purchase for $650 a month, $65,000. You got a good deal. You got something that's sellable. So you find somebody and say, look, I've got this property, and in 2 years it's going to be worth $85,000, or I've got it below market or whatever. And you go to the retail crowd and assign your lease option to somebody for a good way to do it is you could assign it for, say, $10,000. They might only have $2,000 cash, so you take their $2,000 cash, and then you pick up a note free and clear for, say, $8,000, whatever payments you can agree on. So they're paying you, they give you $2,000 cash, they take over the existing lease option and give you a note for, say, $100 a month on the $8,000. Now, the note's worthless because it's not secured by anything. You're not secured on real estate. But if they pay you, cool. If they don't, so what? So that's, you know what I'm saying? It's free money. So that's another way you can do lease options. You can turn around, just assign them and pick up money. In the same way, anything you assign or whatever, you can always take notes or do whatever. You can get creative in how you're doing it.
Trade. Do a lot of leases have a clause in there where you can't sublease?
Sure, but not the lease you're going to make that you sign. When you're going to be in control of the transaction.
Yeah,
you're writing the contract. You're in control of the transaction.
Right.
So when you go to somebody and you're writing up the lease option,
obviously don't ever have that.
Yeah, that's right. You're going to have the right to sublease, the right to assign, or whatever. Now, the one that you give away, that's not going to have that clause
right.
in there. It's going to they won't be able to sublease. They won't be able to assign. So it's the other way.
So do you just kind of put it in there and don't really tell them? I mean, if they see it, great.
That's what
if
I was
they
wondering.
Don't, it's on them. It's just in there.
It's just that, yeah. I mean, it's not in there.
But you don't ask them.
No.
Can I sublet?
No.
you just lease it.
No. I am pretty upfront with people most of the time when I'm doing stuff. I mean, I'm pretty blunt. Look, I'm going to do what I need to do to make a profit. I mean, I'm pretty upfront.
Most properties, when you lease them, they have the contract. You don't. The person renting doesn't provide the contract.
So grab it, scratch it out. Tell them why. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
That's really a good habit to get into, seriously. Reading over contracts, I don't like this. Contracts are really negotiable. You'd be surprised. I mean, that's a big issue I've dealt, like on some commercial properties and everything, that's a big issue I've dealt with where I've turned around and this is not happening. Redo this. Or I turn around, scan it into my word processor and into Microsoft Word, do it, take out a paragraph, eliminate it, say, here, this is the one I'll sign. I do that a lot. That's part of the negotiation.
Okay.
Yeah, not just numbers. That's a big part. Your big companies, they're major negotiations. They're major negotiations the way the contracts are structured, because that's where their money is. Because they may resell them or do whatever. I mean, you'll get a lot of people say you can't assign, like with banks. Banks don't want you to be able to assign contracts because they want to know that who they're dealing with is going to be able to close. Do you know what I'm saying? And they don't want any bunch of red tape or whatever and want to be investors getting involved with it, because every investor seminar has told them to write on the contracts John Doe and or assigns. And banks don't want to see that because they don't want it assigned, because they want to know, if you got the money, if you're a real player, get this done. Do you know what I'm saying? But when it comes down to it, I mean, every time I've had a couple of contracts with non-assignability clauses in it, and I went right past them, and here's how. Whenever we got ready to assign it, the commercial building had a non-assignability clause in it. And when I signed the contract, the guy called me up and said, I said, well, we'll be closing with another partner of ours, this guy here, and I just told him who it was. And he goes, okay. And that was it. End of story. Because when it got down to it, there was 10 days left, and he just wanted his money. Because he had already been through, when I got the building under contract, he had already been through two closings that died. And I had been following on both of those. And then I put it under contract. And then another tidbit, when I had it under contract, he wanted like $5,000 earnest money. I said, oh no, that ain't happening. I think I put $500. So I think, it may have been $100, but I think it was $5. But he wanted $5,000. I said, that ain't happening. And he was motivated, and he got to the point to where he was like, well, I can do that. I said, well, man, and it was about a 10-minute phone conversation with him. He's like, yeah, but I got to have it. I said, well, I'm not doing it then. I mean, you can either take my word that I'm going to get this done, or we won't do the deal. It doesn't matter to me. And see, if you go into every deal like that with that attitude, it changes the complexion of everything. If you go into a deal where you want a deal, or you're buying houses for the sake of buying houses, you're screwed, because you'll inevitably make bad deals. You can't do it. You have to buy houses that make sense and make deals that are good. Okay, so we've got lease options kind of cleared up. Next technique in your arsenal is subject to. Basically, subject to, when you have a contract, you can have a clause. Subject to got built into something that it wasn't. A bunch of us got on the internet, we turned it into something that wasn't. We called it a certain type of technique when it really wasn't a certain type of technique. And then it got coined that all the way across the internet. Now everybody calls it buying subject to now. But what subject to really means is when you have a real estate contract, you have a paragraph in there, a blank paragraph, where you write in what you need. Typically those are subject to clauses. This real estate contract is subject to me getting financing, subject to a clear title, subject to, my dog liking the property, subject to whatever. But you got to sit here and get your clauses right. Contract we recently put on a property a couple days ago, subject to clear title, of course, which I rewrite. It's already built into my contracts, but I always rewrite it out anyway. Subject to finding a suitable tenant occupant for the property. In other words, I wasn't even going to take their property, unless I found the occupant that I'm looking for. That was what we wrote in that. And then wrote also subject to satisfactory negotiation with the lender, which I did that for the fact that we're probably working a short sale on it. So Those are subject to. Well, one of the other subject to's is subject to, we're buying the property subject to the existing financing. So you're going to, in other words, you're going to leave the financing in place. It could be subject to liens. It could be subject to taxes that need to be paid, subject to anything. But subject to existing liens or subject to the existing financing. So what that means is you're going to go in and you're going to take over payments on the existing financing. You're not going to pay it off. You're just going to leave it in place. And regardless of any non-assumable clauses or any of that kind of stuff, you don't care. You just turn around and buy it subject to. Again, there's tons of stuff written on this thing. I'm not going to go into major detail. Just understand that's just a technique. Somebody has financing. In fact, I've told you about a little mobile home park that we were going up to buy. And when I say little, I mean little. Probably a total of 15 units. It was actually turned out to be a house, two mobile homes, two two-bedroom apartments, five little efficiency unit apartments, and about six RV spaces. So we're looking at this little deal.
Where is it?
It's up in Oklahoma. And so we're looking at this little deal, and the guy was talking, and basically he wants $58,000 for the whole shooting match. Well, we ran the numbers on the $58,000. Right now, as it sits, it cash flows about $700 a month. Okay? So then I asked him about his underlying financing. He has an underlying loan for $44,000 at 5%. Woohoo! I like that. So I said, well, can you leave your loan in place? And he said, I might be able to do that. So we're going to buy it subject to the existing financing and just give him $12,000 for his equity, or was that $14,000, whatever it is. We're just going to give him cash for his equity. And then take over. So that'll be, it'll give us, with $12,700 a month, that'll give us about, oh, probably an 80% return cash on cash on our money. I'm going to pause for a second for everybody to take a break, and we'll get back in here. Okay, we're back. All right. Just told you about subject to. So I guess the next place to go is to talk about owner financing. When sellers will carry stuff for you. Again, everything you're dealing with has to do with a motivated seller. But some of the things you're going to learn is to go get owner financing. You don't ask the seller to finance the property for you. That's not the place to start. It always works in some sort of negotiation, and it just kind of ends up that way. So you let the negotiation be one thing, and you let the way it happens be another, and the paperwork to be a totally separate issue. Because there can be paperwork created for any kind of transaction you do. So an example, the other day we were dealing on a property. We had a guy that he wanted to sell the property. It was worth about $125,000, and he wanted $110,000 cash for it. So we're sitting there talking for him, and he wanted $110,000. Well, there's no way. I'm not paying $110,000 for the property. It's not going to happen. So we got to talking to him a little bit more, and as we talked to him, we found out he had roughly about a $45,000 loan in place on the property at, I think it was 5%. And so as we're talking to him, and we're like, wow, he's got this 5% loan there. We sure don't want to take that off. So we're sitting there talking. We're like, okay, well, what, I mean, let's talk about this a different way, because he was stuck on $110,000, the price of $110,000. When you negotiate for price once, you never have to negotiate for price again. Okay? You negotiate it once, you never have to negotiate it again. So once you get, we were at $110,000, so now I would have liked a little better price, but now we got to switch the negotiation over. We need to switch it to something else. Okay? You can buy a property. Think about this for a second. You can buy a property if you buy a $100,000 property. And you know that you can get $1,000 a month for the property, and you buy it. But if you made a deal with somebody, I'll buy your $100,000 property, and I'll pay you $1,000 a month until it's paid for. Is that a deal or is it not? $100,000 property, you buy it on payments or something, you tell them you'll pay them $1,000 a month until it's paid for. Is that a deal or isn't? And you haven't mentioned interest or anything else. So everything is 100% principal. That's a heck of a deal. Because with no real financing, no extra interest or anything else involved, that thing's going to pay off in 100 months. So now, in a little less than 10 years, you own it. So it's hopefully it'll appreciate in a year or two, so you can start having a little bit of cash flow. But knowing that right there, that technique right there will do it. So it's the same kind of thing. We were negotiating with this guy, and we said, okay, we found out he had his $45,000 loan. We said, well, what if we could get you some money now? And he was like, well, what do you mean? I said, well, I mean, there's got to be an amount of money that you're really looking for now. You know, a lot of times I'll tell people, I'll say, well, like if I made you a loan right now, you know, against the property, how much money are you trying to get to? Because they're always motivated for some reason. That could be because they're in foreclosure. It could be because they need cash to move on. There's some number. So as I was talking to him, he's like, well, I don't know. So then we kept talking back and forth. And all of a sudden, he just said, he didn't quite understand me. And he actually said, well, if I got $50,000 plus you took over the payments on my loan, and you took the loan or whatever, and I said, but I didn't mention a number or anything else. And he goes, well, make me an offer. He goes, you're not going to make me mad. And I said, well, I don't know. I said, you know, if I pay cash, I can buy it too cheap, so I don't understand. Well, he said, well, maybe if I got $50,000 and took over payments, I might be able to consider that. And then I just was kind of silent, kept my mouth shut. Then all of a sudden, the next thing is, well, no, I said, well, is that really the best you can do? And all of a sudden, he went to 40. So immediately, we basically had the property at $85,000. So that's almost a cash purchase price. You know what I'm saying? Even paying in cash, I could almost do that. We're closer. The sad thing is the guy ended up reneging on that little deal. He ended up kind of going back and going, well, oh, no, I went too far. I can't do that. But we're still talking, so I'll go back and talk to this guy. Now, probably what will end up happening is he may stick at 110, that price he wants, okay? The goal would be for me to get him to at least 100, so I've got a $20,000 spread there. But anyway, there's a way to work it if you learn how to negotiate. And so negotiating is another tool that you're going to have to acquire. But part of it would be like, let's say that turn around, I find out that, you know, well, let me just give you $20,000 cash, and I'll give you the remaining balance later. Okay? So if I worked it out to where I gave him $20,000 cash and the remaining balance later, even if he wanted 100, let's say he wanted 110, okay? And I didn't have to give him, and he says, well, how much later? Well, the 45 from 110, somebody quick with math. 65,000? 65,000.
65.
Okay, so if I gave him $20,000 cash, I'd still owe him 40,000, 45,000 later on. So now the subject of negotiation becomes, well, when do I get my other 45,000? Do you see what I'm saying? So when that subject comes up, I turn around and I say, well, I don't know, when are you wanting it? Well, they're automatically going to say 6 months or something like that, something crazy, 3 months. They always are. Well, we're a long ways off here. I was thinking 10 years. Mm-hmm. And you start on the other end of the spectrum, and you start working your way back. And so your first jump can be a big one. And they turn around and say, well, oh, no, I can't do that. I was thinking 3 months. I got to have my money. Well, if I got to get you your money that quick, I can't do that kind of number. I got to have either time or my cash buys me profit, one of the two. So then you're right back to negotiation. You keep flinging yourself either back into negotiation, so if the price comes down, or back to where out where you prolong it. So in this case, like I said, my goal will be to get some happy medium. Like I said, if it's 110, if it's whatever it is, but then my goal would be to do it where I do half of his cash now and half of his cash later, preferably about 3 years from now. So let's say I ended up with him at the 110 I just said. That'd be 65,000. So then I would turn around and half of that is 37.5, is that right? 32.5. 32.5. So I would give him 32.5 cash plus takeover payments on his mortgage. And I wouldn't give him the other 32.5 for 3 years. And I would just give him a note for that balance. Not necessarily a note secured on the property. Preferably not, in fact. So then what could I do? I could turn around and sell the property. I could sell the property for, you know, 110, 115 for a quick sale. 32.5 plus the 45 there, roughly 80,000. So I get 80,000, I sell for 110, I'm going to have $30,000 cash. The only thing I have to make sure is I invest enough money, invest enough of that $30,000 to make $32,500 to pay off his note in 3 years. Y'all with me? So let's say that I knew that $15,000 would grow at a certain interest rate, and I put it in some safe place, so that it grows, another house or whatever, and I grow that money. And I take the other, and that's my profit. If you don't have a profit set in, then you invest the money and turn it over a couple times until you do it so you can pay him off. Plus, if it's not due for 3 years, then you can turn around and negotiate that. Let's say that a year from now you call him up and you say, hey, I've got some more money possibly coming in. You know, I owe you $32,500. What if I could get you a little bit of that cash now? Could we pay that thing off early? And start negotiating on that. So you got a second chance to negotiate with them. But that's what you do with owner financing. That's how you're going to do it. Again, the paperwork is just the paperwork. It's just that. A lot of people will do owner financing and buy a property on contract for deed, which a contract for deed means you turn around and they sell to you on a contract for deed. Here in Texas, you want to buy on contract for deeds, but you do not want to sell on them, okay? And if it comes down to either getting the deed of the property or buying on a contract for deed, get the deed. Always get title. If it comes down to one of those two things. But a contract for deed, real quick, is really just a glorified option. It is a contract written up for the deed on a property. Most people don't know this. They're a commonly used thing. They're called land installment contracts, contract for deeds. They're just plain land contracts. I mean, there's different terms for them throughout the U.S., but basically, when you have one, the person's selling to you with owner financing and they structure a contract for deed. It's a real common thing for people to use. You would prefer to get it done on a wrap, which a wrap is where they turn around and structure a note and deed of trust wrapped around the underlying loan or loans. Does everybody understand that? Go with me on that? A wrap would be, let's say somebody had a $65,000 loan at 6%. They had a $65,000 loan at 6%. Anybody got their calculator? $65,000 at 6% for 30 years. And they were going to sell it to you. Well, the payments on that are $389.71. And they were going to sell it to you on a wrap. Now, there's two ways to buy on a wrap. They could literally do a mirror wrap and just sell to you on a wrap exactly for the exact same balance, exact same interest rate and everything, so nothing changes. Okay? Nothing changes. But you can also sell on a wrap to where you wrap it around the exact same present value, $65,000, and raise the interest rate, and it will create a cash flow spread. Everybody understand that? Okay. And I'm going to go into the notes here in a minute, a little bit deeper. So once you do that, if you did it at 8%, there would be a 2-point spread on that deal. So that would create a cash flow. At 8%, the payments would go to $476.95 at 8%.
So you got almost $100.
Yeah, almost $100 just by selling it on a cash flow basis. So somebody could sell you on a wrap invariably and make an extra $100 a month, you know, for their trouble or whatever. So you've got to... You pay that, but that's what wraps do. If you're going to buy, you always want to get title to a property, in my opinion. Now, it's just a technique of owner financing, getting it. These are part of the structures and part of what you're doing. Notes. Notes are a big part of what I deal with in understanding structuring deals. A note, again, to me, they're the backbone of every transaction out there. A note is created every time somebody sells a property with financing. See, there's only a few ways that you can buy property. When it comes down to it, you can buy property for all cash, buy property in pieces, which is usually means there's financing involved. Everybody understand that? In other words, in pieces, so somebody structured some sort of financing of some sort, either cash now, cash later, so there's some financing involved, on payments where the money was put up, so it's in pieces. By trade, trading something, somebody gives you a Mercedes for a house, or a combination of those three. That's the only ways to buy. There's no other way. So once you realize that, it becomes real easy. You just got to figure out how you're going to make it happen so that it's favorable to you. And if they still get what they want, you get what you want and can make a profit because you understand you're taking advantage of, typically when it's they're a motivated seller, you're taking advantage of a perception of value. Their perception is they can't do anything with it and they want it solved. Your perception is you know that you can solve the problem and make a profit because you know more usually about financing. You know more about or financing and or finance. You know more about the market. You're an expert at it, and that's your job. Your job is to become that expert to make it work. So anyway, on about notes. Notes, the cool thing about them is that a lot of times, now banks, big institutions don't typically discount their notes to us directly, to the little people. They sell theirs in big bulk or whatever. But what you do have are what are called short sales. And a short sale is sort of a note sale. And let me explain. The underlying financing is the note on a property. When somebody wants to go and they want to sell their property, but they can't because they owe $65,000, they're heading for foreclosure or whatever, and they can't sell it because they owe market. Well, then you can sign a contract with the seller to buy it for, say, $40,000, and then put subject to negotiation with the bank or whatever, and then you get them to do a short sale package, which what they'll do is they'll go to their lender, and they'll say, look, I've got somebody that wants to buy my property. I want out of this thing. I can't get out of it, can't sell it. Market won't hold up, whatever. Property needs repairs, whatever it could be. And with that short sale, they will turn around and the bank will possibly consider discounting their loan enough so that the seller can discount the payoff of his house. So they discount the payoff of their loan so the seller can sell the house.
Have you done short sales?
Yes, yes. Yeah, they're very viable. In fact,
have you done well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I haven't done a lot of them. Uh-huh. I mean, I probably passed over more short sale deals in a period of 2 years, probably to the tune of not putting $500,000 at least in my bank account because I didn't know about the technique. So, I mean, I didn't know about it for years. But now, yeah, now I do. I mean, the deal I told you about earlier, that's how it's going to be done probably, is a short sale.
The mobile home thing.
Yeah. So, anyway, that said, short sales, they're sort of a note discount. But where the really big note discounts happen, again, notes are discounted. Now, when I said big institutions don't normally discount them, I talk about big institutions like Bank One or whatever. They will not normally discount your first liens. Now, second liens are a whole different matter, okay? If you got an institution and they own a second lien on a property, let's say that they've got, let's say somebody has a first lien of $70,000, payments of $700 a month or something, and there's a second lien of $20,000. Maybe somebody put a pool in or got some siding done or whatever, okay? And the payments on that are $250. And both payments are in arrears, but the first is foreclosing. When the first is foreclosing, you can turn around and discount that second lien once, because they should be getting motivated by now. I've never seen any that I know of where they'll, unless that's their game plan, but they're not going to typically go in there and pay the reinstatement. Let's say that the $70,000, the $700 a month, it's behind 4 months. So that's roughly $3,000 plus any attorney fees or anything else. The second mortgage holder is not going to go pay the $3,000 to reinstate that first and then foreclose their sales in most cases because it's throwing good money after bad. They're going to write it off, collect their insurance, do whatever they do, and go down the road. So a lot of times you can discount those liens. I've discounted to as little as $1,000.
Wow.
So all of a sudden you just knock $20,000 out of the way with a $1,000 check. Okay? Use an option to purchase it, or you can just do, you know, a regular contract. Now, about notes, there are several things you can do with notes when you do it. You can buy them, you can have them assigned to you, or you can have them released. So there's three things you can have done with notes. Okay? Now, I'm sorry, you can pay, I said that wrong. You can pay them off, or you can buy them and have them assigned to you, or you can have them released. Okay? You want to buy it and have it assigned to you. Because if you pay it off, if you go in here and you spend $1,000, in most cases that's what you want. If your person was still in the property and you paid off that $1,000 lien with $1,000, you just paid off their debt. Do you understand what I'm saying? You don't want to pay off their debt. You want whoever's there to still owe the debt in a lot of cases. And so that way you can negotiate. This is a great technique for picking up property. You could chase the seconds around, option to buy them at a discount, then go get somebody to deed you the property on the first. Do you follow me?
Is that hard to do?
No, not at all. Not at all. Like for instance, but you always want to buy them, have them assigned to you. The other thing you can do is, let's say you buy a property and it has a second lien in place or some kind of lien in place. You can negotiate to get them released from the property. Say somebody deeds you a property and you didn't do your proper title search and you found a lien there and it's for $10,000 and you're like, oh my gosh, this was so stupid of me. I bought this property, now there's an extra $10,000 owed I didn't know about. What am I going to do? And you're fixing to sell it and you were fixing to make a $20,000 payday, and now you're going to make a $10,000 payday because you made a $10,000 snafu. And that person that has that lien is going to do it. So what you can do is you can turn around and call up the lien holder and say, look, John Smith doesn't own the property anymore. I do. And you have a lien on my property. I need to get this lien removed. Now, I can handle this in the courts and get it removed or whatever, and you can say, and legally you might not be able to, but you can say whatever you want to say. I can handle this in the courts and get this removed, this property, because they don't own it. Or we can work this out. All I need is a release of lien from this property. You can still go after John Smith. You can still chase him down, still get him to release it, but still put it on any other property they have, but just not on my property. And so maybe you write them a check for $250 or $500 and get it released from that property. You see what I'm saying? You get it released, now you go to your closing and you don't realize your whole $20,000 check, but you sure didn't take a $10,000 snafu. That happens a lot. IRS liens, you can do the same thing on. You can get those released from property at times.
By writing the IRS a letter?
Tell them, yeah. It's better to wait them out if you can.
They don't usually show up or bother you.
They don't usually show up, huh?
So you can prove that you wrote them the letter.
Yeah. You got to get them to release. You got to get them to release it or whatever. So, but there's ways to do that. And sometimes they'll be up for expiring and they won't renew their liens and whatnot. So, but learning all the nuances about discounted notes is a real big heavy play. Think about this play here. What if you picked up that, had an option to buy that $20,000 second for, maybe you sent in $500. You only risk $500 and you had an option to buy it for even $2,000 or something, okay? So you turn around and did it, or you went ahead and risked $1,000, it doesn't matter. Then you turn around and you short-selled the first as well. And let's say that this property here, there's two liens, and this property were worth $100,000. So we got a $20,000 second, a $70,000 first, and the property's worth $100,000, so there's not much spread. But you went and you discounted the first down to $1,000. You got the second. Then you turn around and discount the second down to $1,000. You short sold the first, and you got them to go to, say, even $60,000, $62,000, whatever. So if you got them to agree, we're going to round numbers here, agree to go to 60, you just create a nice little hefty spread there for you to do something with the property. So notes are worth really getting into and learning about. We'll go into them further and further. But again, mostly what I'm trying to do here is get all the techniques out, different things you need to learn, so that you have the tools so you can start understanding how to structure deals in your mind. Because once you understand this, you'll be looking at a deal and you'll you'll start figuring out what the numbers are, what's going on. You'll go, okay, this is what's going to happen. Note deals that I've done, I've taken before because of my knowledge of notes. I've taken and negotiated owner financing where, like I said, I've had no payments, no interest, because I never mentioned payments or interest. Never. And so anytime you're doing this stuff, don't mention payments or interest. They won't either. So you end up paying people in lump sums of cash. And that it's a lot easier to deal with that if you have it spread out or whatever over time. Other things I've done, I've structured it to where I sold off parts of notes. Now we're going to go into that just a hair bit. Part of buying property is figuring out how you're going to finance them, especially in the beginning. In the beginning, when you're first starting out, everybody wants to go and get loans or whatever. That's the last place to go. Save your credit. Use your credit for doing your personal stuff. Use your credit for maybe building, co-signing for credit in your corporation so it can stand alone on its own self. Use your credit for taking opportunities, once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, short-term, that you can get your credit free back up again, unless you're going to go into, you know, real big, heavy lines of financing. But on the other side of that, creatively doing, you can figure out how to creatively structure deals. You can sell notes. Knowing that you can sell notes, selling notes is a way to finance properties. So that I'm going to go ahead and outline that deal we were just dealing with. The property that we just dealt with, we're picking up. It's on a foreclosure. Roughly $80,000 owed. It's on the tax rolls for $125,000. I honestly don't think it's worth more than about right around $100,000. I think it's been overappraised. So I'm going to go with the $100,000 value because that's what I believe. So this property is worth $100,000. We've got it picked up. And we're buying it for $80,000 plus the $4,000 of rearage that's going on for the property. All right. Now, I could do this thing. I'm already buying it subject to the existing financing. So I could turn around and I could find somebody that has the $4,000, sell it to them for $104,900. So they give me $4,900 down. And I wrap it right around the $80,000. So I'm already buying the property subject to, okay? That's one way I could do it. But the reality is when you first start out, what you really need to do is go in for cash. Every time you do a deal, you need to be thinking of ways to get to the cash. So what we're actually going to do on this deal is, instead of going for the $4,000 here, I'm going to start marketing for that person anyway because I might find somebody has $7,000 or $8,000. But I don't think it's going to happen right now in the market we're in. So what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to change up my plan a little. I'm going to turn around and I'm going to do a combination of several things because by the time this thing is going, the foreclosure is still marching on, okay? It's $4,000 behind right now, but here as we get closer to the date of the foreclosure, this thing may be $6,000 or $7,000 behind and I'll have to pull money out of my pocket. That's the last place thing I want to do. I don't want to pull money out of my pocket. I want to put money in my pocket. So the way this will end up structuring is we'll turn around and we'll market it for probably, again, $7,500 down or something crazy, more than we need. So that if we can just cure the foreclosure, wrap it, go down the road, it's a done deal. But if not, what we'll do also is in the process, before we reinstate the loan, okay, pull it out of foreclosure, we'll turn around and we'll start working on a short sale on this property. So if I start working on a short sale, let's say that I could get them down to, say, $70,000. Okay, so I get them down to $70,000. The bank, seller, I know the seller will do, they'll take the 70. Now I got to get the bank. Go ahead.
On a foreclosure like that, the mortgage company, the person holding the lien, it would be very unusual. They'd get their full amount anyhow.
They won't. Most of the time right now, especially where we're at here in Texas, there are so many properties hitting the deals now. They're getting the properties back. Nobody's bidding them up at the courthouse, and they're getting their properties back.
Yeah.
So would it be better then to buy it as an REO if you can't get it from the homeowner?
I prefer to deal with them with the homeowner. I prefer because when you go, this is what I know of it. I don't... As an REO, you're dealing with all cash then, right then and there. And then you're dealing with a bank who doesn't like you to sign contracts. You've got to have your cash in place. Do you follow me? Whereas here, you're not doing that. You can creatively structure it to get your cash to the table. Do you follow me? Whereas if I go to the bank and I deal with the bank, I've got to either have a loan, I've got to have cash, or I've got to get the deal done. And one way or another. I'm not saying you might not be able to buy a little bit better deal, but to me a better deal is whenever you don't have to pull cash out of your pocket. Let me show you what I mean. Go ahead.
Okay, on a short sale, when you have a short sale like this one, let's say you buy it for 70 instead of 80, which was the lien holder was sitting on, do you have to then pay them off?
Yeah, you got to pay them off cash too as well.
Pay them off cash too. Yeah.
But I've got a little bit of time as I'm doing this because I'm already working with the homeowner. I've already got signs out. I'm already marking this thing and going. So what's going to be happening while we're negotiating with the bank? We're going to be trying to prolong that foreclosure.
Okay. Speaking of time, what are you speaking of?
Well, here in Texas, we got 21 days to foreclosure.
Before foreclosure.
Before foreclosure happens. But once you start talking to the lender about short sale, that you can negotiate that time a little.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, you can get them to pull it from the sale and buy yourself more time.
Like?
Last thing they want is that property back.
Yeah.
So once you go here, let me go further and show you where the cash is going to come from. Yeah. So once you go here, you get it down to $70,000. Now you got a little more time. So you're going to turn around. If they negotiate, you're going to have to come up with $70,000 cash. But that's okay. So you still got it marketed, like I said, for $104,900. That's what we're marketing the property for, thereabouts, with owner financing. So now you find your person, and they got $4,900 down or whatever, and they give you the $4,900, which that wouldn't have been enough to reinstate the loan and pull it out of foreclosure. Because by now, the foreclosure's gone another month or so, and there's another payment added and attorney's fees and everything else. So you'd have to pull money in your pocket, not very much, a couple thousand, which it's still a decent deal because you're going to cash flow it. But here we're going to pull cash out. We're going to make money on the deal. So you got $104,900. Somebody gives you $4,900 down. So you get your $4,900. You owner finance it to them, and then you sell the note. So now you create a note. I'm going to do this in a one note shot right now. So now you create a $100,000 note, and you find a note buyer, and there are note buyers out there that will buy your note. Okay. Let's say they tell you they'll give you $82,000 cash for your note. Okay, so if they give you $82,000 cash for your note, well, you just pocketed the difference between 70 and 82. So you pocketed $12,000 plus the down payment you got of $4,900. You just made $16,900 for knowing how to do this and make this work. Now, there are ways to protect more of your profit and stuff in there that we'll go into later. But mainly, I want you to understand the technique. There are institutional note buyers out there that will buy that note. And so you structure, sell that note, get it done, and you pocket $16,900 for doing the deal. Then on top of it, you can't focus on the discount because there's an $18,000 discount there. You can't focus on that in the beginning. You got to focus on the cash of doing the free deals and getting plenty of deals coming to you. And so that's the deal. Now, there's ways we can protect it. We'll go into that in another classroom, how you protect it. But your main deal is you want to get to that $16,900 cash that you just made on the deal. Go ahead.
How long does it take to negotiate with the bank?
Well, on a short sale?
Yeah.
Short sales, the shortest that we've done is about 60 days. I mean, it's a long, drawn-out process. It takes them basically, the steps in a short sale are this. The steps in a short sale are, first thing is you get it under contract with your seller. Once you get it under contract with your seller, then you turn around and you're going to go ahead and buy it subject to from your seller so you protect yourself. You're going to get the deed and everything else signed to you. You're just not going to file it. Then the next step is, once you have it under contract, you're going to do a contract that's going to go to the bank for a lowball price, basically, on the property. Like for instance, our target's 70 on that one I just said, so I'd probably send something in the bank at 62,000 or something, maybe even lower. You know, something crazy where they'll do it. You don't want to be so far that they just totally dismiss you, but you want to be low enough to where you got room to go up. You always start lower in a negotiation. Then they're going to turn around and say, "Well, we'll have to see." And you're in that process. You're going to send them in short sale paperwork with that contract. You're going to have requested a short sale package. You're going to send it back into them. Once you send it back into them, they're going to send out a drive-by, get a drive-by appraisal. It's called a BPO, broker's price opinion. The little real estate agent in the area, and they will they'll send them out, drive by, take a look at the inside of the property, and get an idea of what the property's value is. And the broker will turn around and say, oh my gosh, this property's worth X amount of dollars. So in this case, let's say that they came back and said that the property was worth $90,000, okay? If they say it's worth $90,000, what I've found out is whatever that broker's price opinion is, they always come back and ask for $90,000, first shot back. I'm sorry, we can't go. We're $90,000. Even if you, whatever you've offered, they say, nope, we were offered $90,000, that's what we're taking. That's their first time. That's when the negotiation begins. You say, well, did your broker obviously tell you about the work it needs here or this, or the fact that the housing days in the market are this, your real estate commission is going to be this, or taxes owed that are this? That's when you start hitting them over the head with a rubber hammer and start applying a little pressure and saying, fine, you can take it back at $90,000, but you're still going to be sitting on it for this long, this long, this long, and it's going to cost you that much. This is why my offer is better. Just take my cash now. And so then at that point, what they're really going to end up doing, for insurance reasons is what I've come up with, is they're not going to take lower than 82% of that $90,000. So in this case, that'd be $73,800. So that's $3,800 above my target of what I said a while ago. So in this case, instead of making $16,000, I make $4,000 less. Okay, I can live with that, I guess. This is a quick way to get your deal started, get cash in your pocket to get everything running. Now, in the meantime, as you become a more seasoned investor, you don't want to be lining up all the stars and making things happen. When I started off, my criteria for a deal was real simple. One, that the financing were in place. In other words, I buy it subject to or with owner financing. So that was one of my criteria. That had to happen because I didn't have a way to finance and didn't have any cash. The other was that if it was like in foreclosure or something else, or there was cash going to the seller, the cash had to come from my buyer. In other words, it had to come from my buyer. In other words, if it was $4,000 behind, well, then I had to get $4,000 from my buyer. That was my criteria. It's real simple. And could I make a $20,000 profit in the process? That was my criteria as an investor when I started. Could I create a $20,000 spread, cash flow approximately $200 a month, and have no money out of my pocket? That's how I started. That was basically my complete criteria. As you go, your criteria should change, and you shouldn't run and do all deals just for cash flow. You have to do them for cash and build up your portfolio of cash too and change your game. Because as you become a more seasoned investor and you start running a business of real estate, you need to start developing more private financing of money. Get as much private funds as you can so that way you can take advantage of deals as well. Because when it comes down to it, cash is king. If you can buy something cheaper for cash, you're better off to go ahead and pay the cash a lot of times, unless your financing is just out of this world. You follow me? So you'll always be going, okay, should I insert my cash here, or should I insert some sort of financing here? Or should I insert some sort of creative technique that allows me to get in this with no money? Do you follow me? That's your three decisions you're going to have to make. Am I use cash? Am I going to get it financing? Or am I going to basically sell it before I buy it to make this thing work? So everybody, as you're starting and you're going out here and you're finding deals, you're going to sit here and start figuring out, okay, I'm looking at this deal. Does this fit my criteria? Is it going to give me the cash flow I want? Am I going to make the profit I want? Is it going to get the cash that I want? What is my first goal? And that's basically all you're looking for. You're looking to keep structuring deals to get them to whatever. So you'll keep increasing your tools, your negotiation strategies will get better. You'll find things that you like that just work for you, that seem to fit perfect. You'll increase your tools of people, like how to use real estate agents or whatever. I mean, there'll just be different tools that you'll acquire. And every time you put a tool in your toolbox, it's just a different way of doing a deal. There are ways like, there's so many nuances to real estate. I mean, so much more that I don't even know. You know what I'm saying? But this is the basis of what I learned starting off on how to do deals, how to get things structured. Okay? Cool? Hello?
Hello, this is David Alexander. I want to tell you thank you for taking the time to listen to this audio. Also to let you know that you can feel free to share it with others that might be interested in learning more about getting into real estate investing. And as well, if you're looking for more products for yourself or others, you can always go to creatingwealthwithoutajob.com. Again, that's www.creatingwealthwithoutajob.com. Also, you can go to www.banditsigns.com. Again, that's banditsigns.com to find, of course, Bandit Signs and Car Magnetics and all that other stuff. So hope to see you around in the business and investing world, and thank you.